That is suspiciously close to disco for my taste. I don't even want to ask what it is. It's a very techno pop or Euro trashy. I don't know.
Yes, the group Capital Cities. The name of the song is Kangaroo Courts.
So they're current.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, actually, I like the vocals coming in. That's a little bit better. Well, hi, everybody. It's Stephen Hayward sitting in for Bill Bennett today on Morning in America. Before we go to our guest, one quick news headline I spotted this morning. The headline is Rat Sightings Up in Chicago, oh. Which can only mean the city council must be getting out more, as near as I can tell.
Oh, man.
Well, if you can't joke about Chicago politicians, who can you joke about? It's my pleasure now to welcome to the program the election analyst extraordinaire. It's Henry Olson from the Ethics and Public Policy Center. And what you should know, listeners, is that if Henry says it, you can take it to the bank. Good morning, Henry. How are you?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Good. And so I'm going to start off with the really big question that everyone wants to know. And as
All right.
I say, to repeat, if you say it, you can take it to the bank. If Trump wins the nomination, can he win in November?
No.
I thought you'd say that. You're always so cheerful and optimistic about the prospects for people like Trump.
Well, you know, Trump alienates more people than he excites.
Yeah.
And you're already seeing that in the polls, where he hasn't led a poll against Hillary Clinton since February. And people like him in other countries tend to have exactly the same sort of profile, excite 20% of the people and frighten 80% of the people. And he's not going to lose 80-20, but he'd lose by a pretty hefty margin absent something like a terrorist attack on American soil.
Or an indictment of Hillary, maybe? Well, we'll leave that aside.
An indictment of Hillary, you know, that's another one of the game changers. But absent something like that, then, yeah, Trump goes down to defeat.
Right. In preparing to talk to you this morning, I watched the interview you did a few days ago out of Patrick Henry College, which is, by the way, the alma mater of our show producer, Chris Beach.
Patrick Henry.
Yeah, and I thought Marvin Alasky, your interlocutor, did a great job of asking you questions. And the students, by the way, Chris, they did you proud in asking Henry great questions. You said at least two things that struck me as interesting and that you're not hearing repeated by the usual analyst. One is Trump's strength, not so much with very conservative voters, but with moderates or somewhat conservative voters. Everyone is saying in the, you know, the mainstream media that, oh, Trump's just appealing to far right crazy people and, you know, the Tea Party fringe or something like that. But it's really not that, is it?
That's right. I mean, in fact, it's quite the opposite. That's been clear throughout the election that if the Republican Party really were in the grips of the Tea Party, Donald Trump would not be the nominee. Ted Cruz would be the nominee.
Yeah, interesting. The other one that was really a stunner to me is everyone says that Donald Trump rocketed from being something of a joke when he started his campaign last summer by attacking immigration, right? And you point out that the poll results show that for most Republicans, it's actually most Republicans support immigration reform in some moderate ways. That's only a minority that are very strong restrictionists. And instead, you said the real dividing line was something else. Tell us about that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, Trump, the way I look at it is that immigration is kind of like the price of milk in the grocery store. It's what gets you in the door, but it's not where they make their profits. And Trump used that, made a big splash, got up to low 20s, and then built himself into the mid 20s. And then he was stuck there for a number of months until the San Bernardino attacks. And when he called for the Muslim ban on Muslims entering the United States, he rocketed up into the low to mid 30s. And that's where he's been ever since. And I think that was the dividing line. That's what turned him from a minority candidate into the potential nominee.
Say a little bit more about that, because, you know, everyone, but even very many conservatives, Paul Ryan, for example, the speaker, said that's not conservatism, calling for a complete Muslim ban. Other chin-pulling foreign policy experts said, probably with great sense behind it, that, look, that's a ridiculous idea. We need to cooperate with Muslims who are not radicalized if we're actually going to win this global struggle against radical Islam. And then, of course, Trump's critics said, well, that just shows you he's a racist and a bigot and all these other things. But I think you think all those explanations are incomplete or inadequate.
Well, they all may be right in their narrow sense, in the sense that it may be that we need to cooperate with moderate Muslims in order to defeat terrorism. It may be that that's not conservatism in the way that Bill Buckley or people since him have defined it. But in the minds of Republican voters, that is the single most popular thing that is being asked about in the exit polls, that where the exit polls ask, do you favor deportation or a path to legalization? Even in the Republican primary today, majorities of Republicans favor a path to legalization, but nearly three quarters favor the Muslim ban.
Henry Olson, I think you also said that the Arizona primary is tomorrow. I think that's right.
It is tomorrow. Yeah.
Right. And I think
Trump country.
Right. And you said that, however, that we should look at a 10% over underline. In other words, anything less than a 10% victory margin for Trump would show actually his weakness and vulnerability.
That's right, because Arizona should be Trump country. It should be Trump country because there's not a whole lot of evangelical Republicans compared to even in the Midwest. And evangelical Christian Republicans have been the base of the opposition to Donald Trump. The immigration question is ground zero there. Trump has support from leading figures like Joe Arpaio, and it's also a place that had a massive housing crunch. The prices dropped 50% after the financial crash. That means you've got a lot of economic insecurity and anxiety. It's ground zero for Trumpism. And if Trump doesn't win there by 10 points or more, it suggests that his appeal is going to be limited going forward, that just as the Muslim ban got him from the high 20s to the mid to high 30s, it may be that that is his ceiling going forward. If he doesn't win by 10 points or more, it shows that the other candidates can take him.
Right. Now, Henry Olson, you've talked a lot about and written a lot about how these issues are falling out on the domestic side, trade, immigration, and you did mention the Muslim immigration ban idea. But more broadly, I haven't heard you, unless I've missed it, talk a lot about the foreign policy splits among Republicans these days. Trump has made a number of comments. George Bush should have been impeached. I mean, some really sort of wild things and back and forth on Syria and so forth. But how do you think, or how salient are the fissures opening up on the right on foreign policy to this whole story?
I think that the voters have not yet really focused on that, that all of the candidates, with the exception of Rand Paul, sounded relatively hawkish. And consequently, that's one of the reasons why Rand Paul dropped from being the most interesting man in America, according to some people a year ago, to going the way of the most interesting man in the world, who had his beer commercials canceled, just like Rand Paul's political campaign is canceled. However, going forward, perhaps not in this campaign, in the next few years, there are going to be a lot of fissures on the right. We'll see how Republican voters feel about them. Do they want to have somebody who is more conciliatory through negotiation, even if it's from a position of bluster with our adversaries, which is essentially the Donald Trump position? Do they want someone who is subtly repealing Reaganism when it comes to defense buildup, which is Ted Cruz's position? Or do they want somebody who is willing to put defense first and international involvement first, which was their traditional position that Marco Rubio advanced, and which is the position of most Republican elites, whether they're neocon, paleocon, or supercon out in Washington? That's something that we'll probably see more of after the election than during this election.
Right. Now, Henry Olson, there are few people who have read more political history than you have. And something that's on my mind this week, as I've been doing a lot of research for an article for National Review about the convention, is come what may between now and Cleveland and what happens at Cleveland at the convention, I'm starting to wonder about a rerun of the 1964 convention with Goldwater. You know, some people are saying, well, maybe Trump would lose, but the way he's shaking things up, it would be positive. And I think that is mistaken. But in rereading the history of that convention and the Goldwater campaign, what jumps out at me was how viciously the media exploited the divisions of Republicans. And, you know, the media went and found every possible extremist they could. You know, they said this is I've forgotten some of the people who wrote that this is the stench of fascism and communism. Actually, I think Nelson Rockefeller said that about Barry Goldwater, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing. It's one thing. The media did its part with Goldwater, but we can't underestimate the degree of the vocal and vitriolic opposition to Goldwater within the Republican Party that helped to not only create divisions, but create animosity. I think it's entirely possible that this convention will end up in some mix of 1964 and the Democratic convention of 1968. And what happens if Donald Trump comes in to the convention without a majority pledged to him, and he asks tens of thousands of his supporters to come to Cleveland and show the Republican Party the power of Trumpism?
Yeah.
And this is like the Yippies coming to protest against Hubert Humphrey's coronation by camping out in Grant Park. And that is a recipe for violence. When angry people who are disappointed that they might lose come to a place without a whole lot of order in their own ranks, there certainly will be order in terms of the police, but they won't be mobilized to protest and provoke the way the Yippies were in 1968. But people who are angry do angry things, and angry things include violence, and this could be the worst Republican convention in history.
Oh, boy. Well, you're really cheering me up here at the first hour this morning. you're just a ray of sunshine on a cloudy day, Henry, I have to say.
But it can also be one of the best. And, you know,
there we go.
Let's flip it on the other side. You know, that violence isn't guaranteed. One of the things that made 1968, one of the things that made 1964 so difficult was, first, you know, the vitriol that was heaped on Barry Goldwater, and the vitriol heaped back on Nelson Rockefeller and others, but also the fact that one side of the party that had been a dominant part was completely shut out by the time the convention happened. If this convention is going to be contested, that means that all of the factions have a chance to win, which not only makes it exciting and dangerous and risky, but it also means that you're not going to have the long dominant side of the party go through 4 days of being attacked and
right.
feeling powerless. It's going to be a convention where somebody can lose, but they can't feel that they have been crushed.
Well, Henry, we only have about 30 seconds left, but I think you say you give it about a 30% chance of being a contested convention.
That's right. I mean, one of the problems is Cruz can't win places in the East, and Kasich can't win places in the West, but yet both have a reason to stay in the race, and that creates a lane for Trump's 38% to win lots of delegates.
Yeah, you know, it's a game theorist paradise this year's race, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. Henry Olson, thanks very much. People can keep reading you at National Review Online. Also, they should get your book, The Four Faces of the Republican Party. It's Stephen Hayward sitting in for Bill Bennett on Morning in America. We will be back after these messages. Don't go away.